Chapter 10, Encounter on Friday. It's great to get engaged, and Yussi's enjoyment was no exception to the rule. He looked around the hall immensely happy to see everyone he knew having a terrific time at his very own party. Listen, it was high time this happened. After all, almost all of his shear had already taken the big step, and it was high time that he too joined the club of holy matrimony. The boys were dancing up a storm, except for the guys who were busy noshing on the mini potato knishes and egg rolls that were disappearing as quickly as they were put out. The photographer was busily snapping away at anything that moved, and Yussi had a permanent smile plastered onto his face. The Vort moved along in the expected way, with everyone doing what everyone does at Vorts. The Chassan's musical friends pounded away at their instruments. The guests enjoyed the abundance of creatively decorated and arranged food masterpieces, and the Rabbanim spoke with gusto and charisma, detailing the couple's many fine attributes. In short, the evening was a success. As the evening drew to its climatic end, Yassi's father called him over to the side of the hall for a few minutes, extracting a thick white envelope from his pocket, which he handed over to Yussi. "Yussi," he said, "here is $5,000 for you to buy your Kalaher ring and another special piece of jewelry if you see something which catches your eye while you're out looking. Yussi," he continued, "please take good care of this envelope, all right?" Yussi looked at his father and told him that he'd do his best, and he really intended to do just that. The next day was a Friday, and Yussi headed into Manhattan determined to get a look at the sales going on in a few of the major department stores. The money was safely ensconced in his inner jacket pocket, and he checked on it every so often in an unobtrusive manner, trying his hardest not to belie his nervousness at carrying so much money at once. He caught an inner window seat and looked at the view from the subway car until they entered the darkness of the city-bound tunnel. The lights flickered on and off as the train swayed to and fro, the rhythm of a monster rushing off into the blackened entrance to its cave. He was relieved when they emerged at his stop, and he untangled himself from the crowd of commuters and pedestrians surrounding him. The money was still with him as he climbed the stairs up to the city streets, and within a very short time he was staring in awe at the skyscrapers, which stood proudly all around him. He checked out some of the latest in stereo systems and picked up a shirt at Macy's before beginning to make his rounds from one jewelry department to the next. He was in for a disappointment. First of all, none of the sales were even half as good as the stores had intimated in their ads, the items on sale not even close to what he'd consider buying for his kala. And even when he finally found a store with a truly decent sale going on, they were missing the style of ring that he knew his kala wanted. Either they only had Tiffany cuts, or the diamonds were too big, or they were rectangular when all he really wanted was a teardrop shape. All in all, it wasn't the most unbelievingly successful shopping expedition he'd ever undertaken. But it was getting late, and Shabbos was approaching, and he knew it was time to head back to Brooklyn for Shabbos. So brushing aside his chagrin at not being able to present his kala with a beautiful piece of jewelry in the near future, he left the store and headed back in the direction of the Brooklyn-bound subway station and his grandparents' home where he would be spending the upcoming Shabbos. His problems continued unabated as he stood on the platform undecided about which train would take him back to Brooklyn. The hour was steadily closing in on him, and a feeling of nervousness was quickly taking over in the pit of his stomach. He began to mentally berate himself, asking himself how he could have been so cavalier as to take such a time-consuming trip on an Erev Shabbos. He studied the subway map in between glances at the ads for Seagram's ginger ale and the latest in hairspray. It took him some time, but eventually he figured out what the map was saying, and he stood off to the side, tapping his feet and glancing at his watch, sighing in relief as the train roared into the station. He boarded the train, finding a seat in the corner of the crowded car, and waited to hear the conductor's voice announcing the familiar names of the upcoming stations over the PA system. He waited in vain. The names, when they came, were not in the least recognizable, and what was more, they were few and far between. After about 20 minutes of this, he plucked up his courage and began looking for help. Across the aisle, two black men were carrying on a conversation under a sign advertising the Bronx Zoo about Derek Jeter's performance at shortstop so far that season. Timidly, trying not to bother anyone, Yossi interrupted their heated exchange with an, "Excuse me, sir, but could you help me out?" The men looked at him as if seeing him for the first time, and he could see the wheels turning in their minds as they were asking themselves why on earth this Jewish boy in a hat and jacket was riding their line. "What's the matter, man?" one of them finally spoke up. "Well," said Yossi, "I was just wondering if you could tell me which line I need to get back to Brooklyn."
"Brooklyn?" said the second man with a heavy Bronx drawl. "You on a totally wrong train, man. This train going to the Bronx, not going to Brooklyn. You on the wrong train, man."
"Not only that, man," interjected the first fellow, "this train is she an express train. No stopping for the next 10 minutes at least."
Things were going from bad to worse to schlocky. He had just taken the train in the wrong direction and had gone about 45 minutes out of his way. He had to get off the train, get back on a different one heading the other way, and make it to Brooklyn with enough time to stash his pile of gelt in a secure place for Shabbos. Glancing out the window, he had a top view of some of the Bronx's finest burnt-out buildings. A cloud of smoke was rising off in the distance, and down on the street, two teenagers were in the process of dismantling a car that had foolishly strayed into their territory. What was he doing in the Bronx on an express train heading deeper into the urban sprawl, surrounded by strangers with $5,000 in his pocket? When the train finally came to a halt many long minutes later, Yossi was the first one out the door, where he ran down the length of the platform, up the stairs, around the bend, and down an identical flight where he waited on pins and needles for the train which would return him to some familiar ground. Halfways down the platform, a sad-looking black man sat slowly strumming a banjo to a tune only he could hear, perfect welcoming music to this relic of a neighborhood. Yossi glanced at his watch for the 1,000th time that day. It was almost 5:30. Shabbos would be here in less than an hour and a half. He sighed with relief when he felt the vibrations of the incoming train approaching. It was the right train, and he wiped his sweaty forehead as the door slid closed behind him. Sinking down onto one of the few available seats, he bade the Bronx a silent farewell, hoping never to see the place again. It was incredible to think that only 50 years before, the Bronx had been one of the most Jewish neighborhoods in New York City. This time, it seemed that things were going smoothly, as the train chugged along, making record time. It was an express train like its predecessor, and within half an hour they had arrived at 42nd Street, where he was to change to a Brooklyn-bound train. This, too, arrived right on schedule, swallowing him up into its mammoth insides, which were congested with the rush-hour crowd going home. But nothing could bother him at this point with his destination so close. But then, just as the train was spanning the bridge which would take them into Brooklyn and his grandparents' home, there was a grinding of brakes as it pulled to a halt mid-bridge and sat there sweltering in the late June sunshine. All around him, people grumbled to each other of roadworks and collisions and turned another page in their newspapers. But Yossi's blood congealed in his veins. This was too much. What was he going to do? By the time the train started moving again, it would be too late to take it all the way to his grandparents. He would get off as late as possible, but he would still have a major walk to look forward to. And he still didn't know what he was going to do with the money burning a hole in his pocket. He sat silently counting the seconds as they moved on, relentlessly ignoring his anxiety with sinful pleasure. He could see the sun sinking slowly over the New York skyline and his heart set along with the setting orb. What was he going to do with all the money in his pocket? Should he just hand it to someone on the train and beg them to hold it for him? Would they give it back to him? Stories of all those gedolim from the past came to his mind with a sudden clarity as he remembered hearing of all those rebbes riding into town asking the innkeeper to hold on to their money for Shabbos. The old man on his left began nodding off, his sweaty bald head lolling onto Yossi's shoulder, and Yossi looked heavenward in despair. Suddenly, the train jolted into movement amidst a sigh of relief from the crowd. The old man straightened with a harumph and turned to the next story in his paper, and Yossi got up and stood near the door, calculating the absolute latest he had to exit the train. He had just above 20 minutes. 15 minutes later, the train pulled to a halt a few stops into Brooklyn, and Yussi alighted, dodging pedestrians, bumping into men with attaché cases, and ignoring the escalator, raced up to the street. There was 5 minutes left. He found himself in an alien world as twilight descended over Brooklyn and passers-by hurried home. In desperation, Yussi looked at the assortment of stores all around him, wondering where he should deposit the money for the weekend. All around him were stores of varied description, with multiple languages scrawled boldly across their awnings. Many of the signs were written in Chinese, and never before had Brooklyn felt so far away. There were Italian tailor shops and Polish delicatessens, smoked slabs of meat hanging in their front windows. A dinky beauty parlor shared a front with a barber shop, its vandalized pole swinging pitifully in the muggy evening air. There was no more time to waste. Clutching his bundle of money in his hand, he turned and entered the shop closest to him, which turned out to be a wine and liquor shop run by an old Korean couple. The man looked up suspiciously when Yussi came bounding into his shop, keeping his hand under the counter while sizing him up with a ferocious glare. "Yes?" he finally inquired, and Yussi knew. He just knew that this wasn't going to work. "Mister," Yussi said, "could you do me a favor, please?" The man looked as if he was going to bite his head off at any second, but Yussi strode manfully on. "You see," he continued, "in a matter of moments my Sabbath will commence." He stopped in confusion, not knowing if the man knew what that word meant. "Sir, would I be able to leave this bundle of cash with you here until tomorrow night when I will be able to return?" The man's face had taken on a violent shade of purple.
"So you from the police, you are," he said, "trying to trick me into handling the bad cash? Catch me with the bad money? Put me in the jail for 10 years? Take away my store? What will happen to my wife and kids and my nephew Momo still in Korea, still wanting to come here to the States? How will that ever happen if I'm stuck in jail?" His voice had begun to rise, his eyes dilating, the whites showing, and Yussi thought he was going to have a heart attack. "Get out of my store!" the man shouted at Yussi. "I'm an honest man! Don't you try to get me in trouble, you hear?" Yussi heard. He turned and ran for his life down the street as sunset came ever closer, and the sounds of the boomboxes gradually took over the night. And then he knew that he would try once more, do his ishtadlus, and hopefully Hashem would help. Otherwise, goodbye $5,000. It wasn't a comforting thought, but this was the sitch. Ein ma lasot, nothing to do. And so, without missing a beat, Yussi turned and strode across the street, pulling open the door for Marvin's Convenience Center, and walked inside. Two little bells hanging over the counter tinkled gracefully, announcing his arrival as he entered the store. An older man stood at the counter talking in quiet tones with a customer. His hair was very gray and curled over his shirt collar and down his neck. He was wearing a t-shirt with some slogan scrawled across its front, barely legible now from years of going through the wash. He looked like any one of the myriad nationalities that made up the neighborhood, but there was no choice anymore. Yussi strode up to the counter and waited impatiently for the guy to finish counting out some change for the customer before him. As soon as the guy was out the door, Yussi turned, burning eyes on the older man, and said, "Mister, you have got to do me a favor." The man stared at him as if he was from outer space, but replied, "What exactly do you want me to do?" This was the funny part. How would it sound to this guy when Yussi told him that he wanted him to hold on to $5,000 for him until the next evening? Yussi told him what he needed him to do. He expected the guy to stare at him like he was totally crazy, or to at least laugh at his naiveness in willing to trust an absolute stranger with such a huge sum of money. But the man did none of the above. Wordlessly, he held out his hand for the money, as Yussi did his best to try and explain why he couldn't touch it himself for the next 24 hours. The man slid the money into his cash register and told Yussi in a kindly way that he would see him the next evening. Only then, as he was walking out of the store, faced with the madness and intensity of the weekend all around him, did Yussi face the idea that he would be walking for the foreseeable future. That Shabbos was one of the strangest Shabbosim he'd ever spent. On the one hand, he was very proud of the way he'd handled the Nisayon heaven had thrown at him. On the other hand, and this was a big hand,
It sickened him to realize that he'd basically taken $5,000 and thrown it away into the wild blue yonder without so much as a goodbye, since he highly doubted that the money would be waiting for him when he'd return. He told no one the whole story, playing down his lateness to his grandparents' home, keeping the dull heartache to himself. Suffice it to say, his tefillahs that Shabbos were of a very high caliber indeed. Matzah Shabbos, Yossi borrowed his Zadie's car and drove the half-hour drive downtown, finally pulling over near the convenience store. He got out of the car, steeling himself for the upcoming encounter with the man, who would deny that the entire story had ever happened. Cringing inside, he pushed open the doors and walked inside, outwardly cool as a cucumber, while shaking like a leaf on the inside. The man with the gray hair seemed not to have moved from his spot since he'd last seen him. The same t-shirt adorned his bulk, the same poker look sat on his face. But there was something in those eyes, something that hadn't been there before, and Yossi had no idea what that could be. At any rate, it wasn't his business. He greeted the guy and asked him how his weekend was. The guy told him it was fine, then proceeded to flip open the cash register and remove the $5,000, which he handed over with a flourish to the astounded young man. It took him quite a while, but he finally recovered enough to ask the man why on earth he'd been so honest. What made him return the money just like that? The man went over to the fridge, took out a can of ginger ale, and handed it to Yossi. He then took him over to a few chairs standing by the wall, and they sat down side by side. "I'll tell you why I gave you back the money," said the man. "It's because I'm frum, just like you." "It's because I'm frum, just like you." Yossi's mouth dropped open, and he waited for the man to continue talking. "Yes," the man continued in a sad voice. "When I moved into this neighborhood 35 years ago, I was as religious as you are today. I, too, would never have dreamed of carrying money on Shabbos, and I kept every single mitzvah in the book. But slowly I began to change. The little things went first, and one deed led to another. As the years passed by, I found that I was getting less and less religious, and it bothered me, but I couldn't muster up the energy to change. Until yesterday, that is, when you walked into my store, eyes aflame with worry about our precious Shabbos, not knowing who was going to hold your money for you, or whether you would even get it back. For the first time in years, I felt the pain of what I had dropped hitting me like a ton of bricks. But when you asked me to hold your money, because you had absolutely no idea that I was a Jew, I knew that I had gone way too far. That I should look like a guy. What had happened to me? How low would I sink? It was at that moment that I reverted back to my previous self. It will take me time to really get back to where I once was, but over this Shabbos I realized where I need to go, and I hope to get there sometime soon." Yossi bade a warm goodbye to the man and got back in his car to go home, happier in more ways than one. As heard from Yaakov Yisrael Babad, who heard it from Yossi's grandfather in the Prima Palace on a Friday afternoon.